So, it's me again. I'm sorry I haven't kind of added a new podcast here for a while. I planned on doing one every week, but just got busy with everything, got distracted. So, I kind of like to have a good first episode here and kind of just tell you about my experiences and what's kind of going on and what has happened to kind of lead me to. I want to do this and talk to people and hopefully can help someone to better understand a little bit more about anxiety or panic attacks or depression, things like that. And full disclaimer, excuse me, full disclaimer, I'm here in our home, and so I've got my youngest son here running around, so you might hear him, you might hear me tell him put the cat down. So just to kind of let I don't have anything professional. It's literally just me sitting on my couch, kind of want to talk to everybody and let them know, just a few things. So I think to really understand, maybe put in perspective what kind of led me to do this and how things are, is the fact that really God has given me a second chance. Now, I say that now, and I know some people who may not believe or may not be religious at all, maybe want to turn the podcast off now, but all I ask is that just listen to my story, that's all, and I will be referring to God and I'll be referring to religion. I am a Christian. And so I'd like to just let people know and have an idea of what kind of happened to me. Again, just a backstory of how things are. So basically, I guess I would say that, I had a really nice upbringing. My parents, they always, tried to treat me well and as best as they could. So, I couldn't complain that. I really didn't know anything different on how families are until I got older. And then started to see, a few things that were different from my family and were different in others. So, and that's a little different perspective. But I can look back on my life and realize that the seeds of depression, I mean, not so much anxiety at the time, but the seeds of depression really stretch back all the way into my late childhood, early teens. And I guess the first feeling that I would have equated with my depression was the feeling of loneliness. And that, of course, goes into sadness. And as a child, I was an only child, and I didn't really have any friends. I was bullied at school. And to me, I was just so lonely. And also too, I went to a Christian school, and I was saved when I was roughly 16. But again, I was very bullied at school. I was picked on, I was hit, I was pushed down. And looking back, yes, I should have stood up for myself, but I didn't have any confidence. And one thing that if someone doesn't have confidence, you can't stand up for yourself and you don't know what outlets to turn to for help. I couldn't go to my parents and say, hey, this is going on. They would see bruises on my arms. They would think I was doing drugs because, and I would just tell them no, I wasn't doing drugs, that, me and the guys just play a game. It wasn't a game, though. I was getting hit, and I wasn't standing up for myself. So, excuse me. Again, this goes back into the feelings of loneliness, isolation, depression. And that stayed with me for a very long time. And, in regards to the bullying, it really wasn't until, or at least I was able to forgive those that did it. I'm 35 years old. I'll be 36 here soon this month. That still stays with me. I still remember it. So it affected me very much so. And I just, at the time, thought that was normal stuff. That's just what kids do. I thought everybody had that problem. But again, as I got older, talked to more people, I realized that not everyone had that same thing. Not everyone had that issue. And so it was kind of hard to relate to people, who had that. But then as I, again, got older, I certainly became okay with the loneliness after a while. In fact, there for a long time, I was very comfortable being lonely. I no longer had that feeling of loneliness. I was able just to occupy my time doing something, whatever I wanted to do. But, excuse me, I'm sorry, my allergies bother me. And again, I don't mean to, but you may hear me clear my throat a little bit. And again, I'm terribly sorry. But it's just, this is, again, this podcast, it's a very down-to-earth human experience. One thing I would let people know, if you are on social media, just be cautious, because people don't put their bad times typically on social media. They will put their happy times and what good things are going on. So if you think someone only has good times and happy times, that's not the case. They're just not putting them out there for everybody to see. But again, as I got older, I graduated. Sorry. Went to the military, and that was that was quite the experience right there. It was very fun. I was in the Army. I was actually in the 82nd Airborne Division, and that was a great time. But I did see a lot of stuff, and unfortunately, I did see a lot of very upset people and very sad people. And everything was good, and I had a great time. Felt, invincible. It's the way you're kind of taught and what's kind of going on. Then I got hurt. And when you get hurt, it changes your perspective on things. And you see what you can do, and then you see how others treat you. And you're looked upon as, you're no longer not an equal, but you're less than equal. So again, that went into my depression also, and kind of fed into that, and kept going from there. So then, after the military, got out, moved around a little bit, had some failed marriages, and I was always, for the longest time, underneath the impression that if I could be faster, stronger, or smarter, I can beat anything. And I'll tell you this, no matter how fast or how strong or smart you are, you can't beat depression. You can't beat panic attack. You can't beat anxiety with a physical quality. It's untouchable with like that. What you can do is either use medication or use different techniques to try to work to calm. And one thing I would recommend, if anybody does need a good anxiety app, I think the application Calm is really awesome. I used it there for a long time. You can pay for a different part of it, but the free stuff they have was good for me, and I was happy with it. But again, I can't say enough good things about the Calm app. Like, it was awesome. But so again, failed marriages, moved around, and there for a while, lived out of a car, didn't have a place to live. I got to be there for a while. I was an EMT also. That was a great, great experience in my life. Saw a lot of great things, absolutely loved helping people, and saw a lot of bad things too. But I loved it. But it never paid the bills for me. And I was in West Virginia, that's where I come from. I'm again in South Carolina now, and love South Carolina. But I guess with everything going into the arc of the depression, once I got out of being an EMT, then I started working at a call center, and I would. I'd say that if you've never worked at a call center, it's quite the experience. And the one that I worked at, I absolutely just hated it. But it paid the bills. And at the time, that's what I had to do. And I'll tell you this, when it comes to depression, it's easy for some people to say, well, you're just sad. You need to just make yourself feel happy and things will be better, or why? Or if you don't get that, you'll get, what do you have to be depressed about? You don't have anything to be concerned about. See, what people sometimes don't understand is when they don't take the time to really look at it, is that depression isn't just about being sad. Depression isn't just about being down. Depression is feeling this hopelessness, this emptiness, this, it's not so much that you don't want to get out of bed, that you're lazy. It's that you can barely think of a reason to continue breathing. And it's just, that's pretty much what it is. There's different techniques and there's different medications and different avenues and umpteen thousands of books and stuff on it. But each person is different with it. And unfortunately, depression has claimed a lot of lives. Just a lot of celebrity on top of a lot of everyday, regular people. It's not something that you can just ignore or just say, well, I'll be okay today, don't worry about this, or don't worry about me. It's really the people that we do need to worry about who have depression. It's the people who, show the signs that they might be depressed, that do need the help. And unfortunately, it also comes down to the individual that if they don't want to be helped, it's hard to get them some help. And I know seeing a family member or someone you care about or love be depressed and try to get them help and for them to say, no, it's a hard thing to do because you do want to help someone, you do want to help them, but they don't want to help themselves. And unfortunately, until they realize that it's not something that's just going to go away, but they have to admit to themselves that they are depressed, that it's not just a bad day, it's not just a sad day, it actually is depression. And the really, I can't stress enough that if someone is sad or if someone gets to a point where they seem suicidal, they need help. They need help right away, and they need to feel that they're not alone. I felt for the longest time that I was alone in how I felt, and no one else felt this way. And then it took me a long time to realize that there are other people who do feel the same way that I do, and who do have these same problems. And I was able to relate a little bit better with people like that. But it's very important, though, that they do get help. And if for those people who are battling depression, it's a rough road, I will tell you. And you're not alone. And you do matter. And people do care about you. They want you to get better. I know sometimes it may feel that no one understands you, or that they don't appreciate you, or that they don't care. But there are people who do care, and there are different ways for people to get help. You just have to take the time, and it doesn't matter if you're young or old or in between or anything. Age does not care or matter when it comes to depression. It's a silent killer. It's worse than any disease you can get. And there's no magical physical treatment that you can do to instantly fix it. It's just a sad, sad area. And again, people need to understand that they can be helped, they can get help, that they can be taken care of. But kind of back to my story. So I worked at a call center, and then I was there a couple years, and then they wanted me to be a supervisor. And man, I don't want to do that. I've seen the way that they treat people. But then they told me it'd be a little bit more money. I thought, well, okay, I'll go ahead and apply. So I did, and got the job. And at first, I was so excited to be able to be in that leadership position again, because in the military, I got to do some leadership work. I got to be different class leader, things like that. So I was in charge of people, and I enjoyed teaching and, kind of helping others. So initially, it was great. But then the rest of the center, I should say it, all the rules and things like that just came crashing down, and it just became so, just basically soul crushing being there. I absolutely hated being there. And some people might say, oh, could you just get another job? If you've never been to West Virginia, I promise you, the only other jobs there are either McDonald's, fast food, or Walmart. And again, as a supervisor, I made, let me see here. I was salary put me at 30,000. 30,000 or 31,000. I was paid in salary as a supervisor in charge of 25 to 30 people. That's how much I made. That was barely enough for us as a family, with them and my girlfriend and our kids, to cover for everyone, take care of them. Now, if, for example, I went to work at Walmart, they were different on their wages in regards to they paid less, but there w still would have been the same drive back and forth. So I looked at what I could use and what I could put down, basically to help me, for in the future. And so I thought, well, the supervisor is gonna, that'll look better. So I stayed, and I interviewed different areas, different places around there that I tried to, even if it was a little bit less. I tried for Chick-fil-A, and I tried to be a manager there. One thing I did not know is that you have to be a crew member first before, sorry, that's my son. You have to be a crew member first before being a manager. So I didn't know that. So I really wasn't looking to get back into fast food, because I'd worked at McDonald's a long time ago when I was a teenager, and so I really wasn't looking to get back into that. I wanted to move up a little bit. So I didn't get that job, and again, there was a few other places I applied, didn't get those jobs. And again, in West Virginia, there's just no jobs around. The economy is drying up. Everything is just hard. It's a very, very, very poor state, and it's so sad. It's depressing. When you go there, it's just everyone is depressed. Drugs are everywhere. In fact, the city of Huntington had the highest overdose. I'm sorry, it's the highest overdose city in the country. There's needles everywhere. In fact, they had a program there for a while where if people would bring in their used needles, the city in return would give them clean ones as a, again, one way to try to help. Well, that didn't work out so well. So they did away with that program. But it's, again, it's just depressing. You don't have money to pay for any bills. Or, I mean, you. You're barely living paycheck to paycheck. You can barely pay bills. In fact, I've had so many disconnect notices when I was there in West Virginia, because it comes to a point that you have to decide, do I either want to pay rent, do I want to pay for gas, or do I want to pay for food for a week? What do I want to do? You have to decide those things. And a lot of times you have to cut away one or the other. And these aren't just like every few month decisions. These decisions are weekly that people have to do here, and they have to make those hard choices. So again, it's a very rough state economically. It's a very depressing state. And where I was, again, I felt so trapped. I was so just there was no hope, and I had gotten again, that depression had kicked in so much, and I would go to the VA, and thankfully I was able to find a very awesome VA doctor for mental health that was just amazing, would listen to me, and didn't matter if I had to drive 1 hour or 2 hours to get to see them, they always see me, they always helped me. But it wasn't always that case, and it took me a long time to be able to find that right person to help me with things. So then I ended up, I would see, just to again put in perspective, me and my girlfriend at the time, she's now my wife now, I came back to West Virginia, and I had nothing, so I had to again live in different areas. I had to move back in with my parents when I was 29 or 30 years old, which, if you've ever had to do that, it's not the most enjoyable time. And I again, this added to my depression, and I have two older kids that live in North Dakota that I get during the summertime, and I lost them in the divorce, so there was that space and distance. I was sad about that, but a lot of it just kind of come together, and again, created this just big ball in time of depression. But then I would say that as the time went on, being a supervisor, and then and would say that just more and more things kept happening at work, and it all just kept adding up and up and up, and I could sleep at night, but all I wanted to do was sleep. I had no energy for anything, and half the time I could barely keep my eyes open. I just felt like every day I was just like wading through water, and it was miserable. It was absolutely just so miserable that I couldn't do anything. There was no hope. And I mean, like I said, I tried to find other jobs. I tried all kinds of stuff, and I couldn't do anything. Nothing worked, no matter how hard I tried to do something. So whenever me and my girlfriend got together, my parents had a little trailer that sat on their property down the hill, and the trailer had been built in roughly I think the 70s, I'd say. So it was a much older trailer. It had been lived in previously by my deceased grandma, and it definitely hadn't been kept up or anything, so we had to work and get it taken care of and cleaned up. And we ended up, you know, we were able to move in there, and we lived there for years. And I mean, the roof would either leak, and so or the windows would leak. So, you know, if it rained, we'd have water that would pour down the window inside, and I'd have to try and find ways to, you know, cover that up and block it. The floor started to get really spongy, and so we'd have to peel the carpet back. And it had this very nice, you know, 70s carpet and 70s decorum, so it was like burnt orange carpet and wood paneling all over. The stove, we only had one burner that could actually work, and it was tilted. And you were constantly either just fighting with, it was right beside a creek, so you were constantly fighting with either a mouse somewhere, or there was one time, I remember, I think that, you know, we had to lay traps, because, I mean, we just had a mouse somewhere we couldn't figure it out. It would just gnaw through everything. And so every day, you know, rain, shine, we'd have to walk up the muddy hill and walk across where we'd get in our car to drive for an hour to go to work, to a job that I absolutely just, I despised it. I absolutely hated it. I loved taking care of the employees. I loved taking care of the team. I loved taking care of a lot of people there. But just the metrics of the way that it worked, the way it was ran, the favoritism, everything else, I was just absolutely sick of it. And again, if you've never worked at the call center, it's, you're sitting there taking calls, but it's not just that, you know, you are trying to help people. But generally, if somebody's calling in for tech support, they're not a happy person. And so I can't tell you how many times I was screamed at, cussed at, threatened, yelled at by people. And just because their internet wasn't working, just something as simple as either one, their wireless device wouldn't work in the home, or they couldn't get connected, or maybe they had problems on Facebook. They couldn't get a game to work. And so they would call, and they would be so mad about that. In fact, we had one time where there was a water crisis in West Virginia. And we had over, I forget what chemical had leaked out into the river. And if you came in contact with it, it made your skin just burn. And so very surely and slowly, they had people who start going to the ER, and then they start realizing what was going on. So all the water got shut off for everybody. Well, we didn't have water for, I'd say, a week or 2 weeks. There was about 100, I think they said 300,000 of us who didn't have water. And of course, still had to go to work, you know, still had to do all those other things. So, people would, you know, at the time I was just taking calls, so people would call in and they would say, "Oh, how's the weather?" And I'd say, "Well, you know, it could be better." And they'd say, "Yeah," and they would say, "Well, I'm just really mad and upset because I can't plant my crops in Farmville." And so I said, "Yeah," I said, "I understand." I said, "You know, we've been having some kind of interesting weather here." I'm like, "You know, right now, about 300,000 of us who don't have water. We're hoping it rains soon. That way we can wash our hands and maybe wash a few things." And that kind of stopped that individual real quick and left their little pity party behind. So, just as a way to put things into perspective, I would say sometimes a lot of people need to realize that, you know, you can take a step back from things. It's, you know, it's not a huge crisis as some people may think, but that's just my opinion of it. So, again, back to where I was at and with the depression and everything, and my anxiety had just been ramping up so much, and I was just, it was the feeling I either was going to pass out or I was going to die, or it was my vertigo, and vertigo is miserable. If you've never had vertigo with anxiety, it's just not fun. And it was just, I had so many symptoms, and I was just, every day was miserable. I was so sick. But I couldn't show it in front of any of my people on the team. So I would make excuse to either go to the bathroom or go outside. And if I knew I was having a really bad panic attack, because they wouldn't just happen now and then, they would come in waves throughout the day. I would go either out to my car, and I would just lie down and turn on the music or turn on the Calm app or just something to take my mind off of it and just give me a few minutes peace, because I couldn't find any comfort. I couldn't find any hope. And I would try to escape and hide and hopefully pray desperately that no one saw me having these panic attacks. And because it was, to me, it was just embarrassing. I was afraid people would, say something, and it just, my ego is all. But I was afraid, what if I pass out here and people see me? What if I throw up here and people see me? What if I die here and people see me? These are very real things that ran through my mind on a constant basis. And, that, again, led to, with the anxiety and, everything else and the depression, but it was a really rough time. I mean, I was miserable, to be honest. I really, really was. I was absolutely miserable. And so then I would say probably, let me think for a second here. So, finally, after dealing with everything, and I mean, again, I don't know how to describe it, just how miserable I was, how sad, how low, how I felt like a failure in life, like, and I ended up. Like, yeah, if you ever get to the point where suicide doesn't look as a means of being ashamed, but in a lot of ways it looks like it's a means of you won't be a burden to anyone anymore. That's what I felt like. I felt like a burden to people. I could barely provide for my family. I had my two older kids out in North Dakota that, I felt like I could hardly talk to them, and I barely get to see them. We lived in just this little trailer that was falling apart. I was in this dead-end job that I absolutely hated and could never get away from. And, it. You begin to realize there's a problem if you start questioning what it would feel like just to, to have that gun to your head. Just a feeling, not that you actually want to do it, but just so you know what that feels like. So that way you never want to go back to good again. And I knew at that time when that happened, I couldn't do this anymore, but I couldn't go on the way things were. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I didn't know what else to do. I tried everything. I just couldn't do it anymore. And for the first time, and I should say this, that I hit a breaking point. And even when I used to have to sleep in the car or have to sleep in different people's, friends' couches and random places, things like that, I still never hit my breaking point. I was just always, okay, well, this is what I have to do. This is just the thing that I need to do right now. And so I would do it and just, move on with the day, but I never felt that feeling of just such hopelessness until that point in my life. And then this was just this past February when I felt this way. And when, I hit, they say when you hit the wall, that's the stopping point. Well, I had hit that wall and fallen through it basically, and I remember, and I'll never forget this the rest of my life. I was just so broken, and every chance I try to apply for jobs. I would try to get help either through different resources at the VA, try to pay for things, and I was paying for child support, and while like my ex-wife would be taking the kids all over different places and different, flying them wherever, I could barely pay, any kind of rent. I could barely pay bills that have disconnect notices, and I never blamed anyone but myself. I never turned and said, "Well, then I'm here because it's this person's fault." No, I knew that I was there because of choices that I made. The choices that I made in life put me there, and I never felt sad for myself, but I just, to me though, it was just, I felt like a failure. I had failed in life, and I had no option. And it's when you feel in life that you don't have any options that you start looking for last resorts. And those become the big things, because instead of counting your options or looking at what other perspectives, things that might go on, you start looking as what last resorts do I have? And these are people, when you get this way, these are when you meet someone who's desperate. And it's the individual who is desperate who always either makes the choice of the extreme or the wrong or just anything like that. And sorry, 1 second, this just always upsets me a little bit. 1 second. Okay, so yeah, I had hit my my breaking point. It was a I got I remember one night I got off work and it was cold and it had been snowing and I was making my way down the hill to the trailer. At that point, I just stopped. And I looked up to the sky. It was an extremely clear night. You could see all the stars, everything. I mean, it looked like you could just, they were so close, you could reach out and touch them. And I said, God, I said, I need help. I said, I can't do this anymore. I've failed at everything that I've done. I've tried to make things better. But I've failed. And I cannot go on anymore. I said, I'm sorry for the sins that I've done, for what I have done, for all the wrong that I've done. You know, I know I'm not worthy of anything. And I said, I need some help. I need you to help me. I can't do this on my own. Just please help me. Please. And then I put my head down from the stars and walked on back to the trailer. Went home to another night. But what I didn't know, and what I didn't expect, was just how much things were going to change. You see, for the longest time, I thought God had just forgotten about me. Because I'm nothing. I'm a nobody. I thought that I just, all the stupid choices that I'd make. Now, looking back, you know, I realized that all the dumb things that I did, there was so many times I should have died, but I didn't. I've been in more car wrecks than I can count. Not caused by my own, I should say. So, I've jumped out of planes. I've just done all kinds of stuff. And every time, almost always, I would walk away from something without a scratch. Or barely anything done. I don't believe in luck. I never have and never will. But I believe in being blessed. And I believe in having someone protect you. And looking back, that's what happened. That's what, you know, it was in my life. So from that point on, asking God's help, I should say too that my wife had applied for a transfer. Her family had moved here to South Carolina from West Virginia. She applied for a job transfer. And you know, it was just looking like that she wasn't going to get it. And yeah, we were just, you know, it was just pretty hopeless. Well, then, a few days after I asked God for help, a guy on my team had decided to resign. And so I was talking to him a little bit and kind of, you know, asking him what he plans to do next, things like that. And yeah, he told me, because he saw me a lot, you know, and I always, again, try to take good care of my team. And he said, you know, he's like, you need to get away from here. You need to get out of here. And I said, I know. I'm like, I do. I said, I would love to. And one thing, too, I should also mention is that all the times that I'd be cussed out at work or just treated every which way, and the times I was like, you know what? Like, my employees make more money than I do. Because I think at the time, like, the 13 or 31,000 equaled out to roughly like $13.91 an hour. And so, it would be, yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, my employees on my team made more money than I did. So, that's frustrating as well. And you ended up, you know, he was like, you should just, you know, you need to get into another job, because he could see how beaten down I was. And I said, yeah, I'm like, you know, we need to just get away from West Virginia. He's like, well, he's like a buddy of mine. He's like my best friend. I said, well, no, I told him that, I said, man, my wife put in for a transfer to South Carolina. He's like, oh, yeah? He's like, well, my buddy lives in South Carolina. He's like, in fact, he's like, he's my best friend. I said, really? He's like, yeah. And he goes, I'll tell you what. He's like, with your background as an EMT, you know, he might be able to help you out a lot. Yay. I said, okay. He's like, let me see. I'll give him your number. See if I can't have him call you. Like, okay. Like, well, that's awesome. Like, yeah, you know, that's a great thing. And so, a few days later, he calls me and talks to me a good little bit. And, you know, he says, hey, you know, if you need help, he's like, you know, I'll help you. You know, if y'all can come down here and I can get you a job. He's like, you know, we always need people here at the 911 dispatch center. And we always, you know, just need help. He's like, I know a lot of people. We can definitely get you a job. He's like, that's not a problem at all. And I was like, wow. I was like, huh. Maybe that's just coincidence. You know, that's really strange. And then all of a sudden, a few days later, my wife gets an interview in South Carolina. I was like, wow, like, this is amazing. Like, this is awesome. I didn't tell nobody and say nothing to anybody about that I asked God for help. I kept it myself because I was curious. And so we drive down to South Carolina and does a job interview. And that very same day, she's hired. And you talk about being so happy and starting to kind of put the pieces together that maybe my prayers have been answered. But I still didn't know just how much yet. And so then it became, okay, how soon can we move? And where are we going to live? Thankfully, her family told us that we could stay with them for a few days until maybe we find something else. So I was just amazed. And I also, too, I couldn't wait to get away from the job there in West Virginia. I knew things were going to be tough. I knew things were going to be difficult on us. But I knew we could do this. And, you know, as many times I used to be cussed out and yelled at work, I'd always keep a picture of my kids on my desk. That way I could look at and remind me why I stayed, why I did this, and why I put up with all this. It's for them. And one thing that I do remember shortly before I left, and it took me a long time to realize this, but I thought, you know what? I do all this stuff for my kids. I do everything for this. But I really think that if my kids could see the way I am and how miserable I was, I don't think they want me to be miserable. And so I realized very slowly that my kids will want me to be better for me than not be in this situation. So then it got close to where I was going to be able to quit my job, and I was so happy. I was like, I'm not a type of giddy person by any means. I'm very mellow, calm, quiet. But I was super happy. And all I could do was smile. I had a smile on my face all the time. Because all of a sudden, instead of a little tiny pinhole of light at the end of the tunnel, there was a giant spotlight. And I could all of a sudden, I could see the day new again. There was something that I could see, and there was hope. And for the first time in a long time, I had hope. If you don't have hope, and you don't know what that is, and you miss it, you go so long without having any hope in your life. When that's brought back to you feel like a new person. You feel like a changed person. You feel so amazing. And you feel like you can do anything now. And I hated to see a lot of the people, I hated to leave them, and they hated to see me go. But almost every one of them said, "You know what? We hate to see you go, but we're happy you got away from this place. We're happy that you're going to do something that's going to make you happy, to make your family happy, and not come back to this. We don't want to see that." And that really got to me. And it used to especially get to me when I would have people on my team come up to me and they would see the way that my managers would treat me and treat us as supervisors. And they would say, "You know what? You don't deserve to be treated like that. They need to treat you all better." But I couldn't do nothing because I was a supervisor. Can't do anything with the managers. So I had no room for change. So then, we pack everything up. We took our tax money. That's literally what we had to move on. We packed what we could in the back of her vehicle, and we headed off to South Carolina. I went up here with, we were given about a week to stay with her family. So she goes to work, and now all of a sudden I've got two kids in her family's house, and I got a crunch time of a week. I'm gonna find us not just a place to be, but a home and a one income. So it was very much, one of those things that I was very concerned about, but needed to be done on a very, very small window of time. So I spent the entire week, every day, calling her, "Hey, who can, when can we move in? When can we move in? Is there anything? What do you have available? What's affordable? What's not?" I called a lot of people. Well, it turns out, and I think it was a Wednesday, I got food poisoning, which sucks very badly. And I was so sick. But I spent the day in bed, still calling people. And I got a hold of the last one. I said, "You know what?" I said, "I have called around everywhere trying to find us where to live and get some help." And she said, "I'll tell you what, let us be the last place you call." And I was like, okay, that struck with me. And so we go and we talk to her. Everything's good. We sign a rental agreement. Still, one income, her having a job, me not having a job yet. No prospects. Nothing, right, yet. Did have that one guy, but I couldn't get a hold of him, so that option kind of went by the wayside. But something just told me, you can do it. It'll be okay. You can do it. So we got moved in, and I talked to our landlord. Well, as I was talking to her landlord, told her about her jobs, she said, "Hey, why don't you talk to my sister? Her husband works here. They can connect you with the right people." I was like, "Oh, wow, okay, that's very helpful. Thank you." And then from that point, I've talked to her, found out what jobs are available, found out where to go to get good jobs around here or any jobs. I was like, "Wow, okay." And then from that point on, I almost couldn't go anywhere without someone offering me a job. Didn't matter if we go to restaurants, didn't matter if we go to like Hobby Lobby or Michael's or even the landlord, the apartment manager said, "Hey, what about if you want to come work for me?" I couldn't go anywhere without someone offering me a job. I couldn't even step out of our apartment building one day without having an individual pull up who got lost, and he was a veteran and he was asking some directions. And he offered me a job to come work with him at one of the correction facilities that are close to here. And I was amazed because I didn't go looking for anyone. But all of a sudden, they started coming to me. And again, I'm nothing to nobody. I don't have a college degree. I'm a college dropout. I dropped out of college to go into the army. The only thing I have are skills that I have attained through different jobs. So, I don't have a fancy degree. I don't have anything like that. But for the first time, I wasn't frantically applying, applying, applying. These were all coming to me. And then I got a call from a recruiting place about a work at home job. They said they saw my resume on Monster or something. And I was like, wow. I never had the option to work from home before. Never thought I could do anything about that. And from that point on, everything just exploded in amazing ways. And I can't say enough good things about how it's all thanks to God. It's all thanks to me asking for help. And I know a lot of people say, ask and you shall receive. People ask and they don't get it. I know that. I understand it completely. And I'm not saying I'm nobody. Again, I'm not perfect. I do bad stuff all the time. I'm not perfect. No one is. And I never will be. And I understand that. What I'm saying is that if it comes down to faith, it comes down to believe. Repentance, believe. I still suffer with my anxiety. I still have depression. I'm going to talk about those, but these are things that, this changed my life. And if this, please share the story or have someone listen to this podcast if they, want to hear about anxiety, depression. Again, we'll talk about, God, religion, and just share this. Hopefully someone can be helped by this. That's what I want. I want someone to hopefully be helped to hear this, to be uplifting. Things can change. You can have things. And again, I still have bad times. I still have problems. Still got bills, still got all that stuff. But my life changed and I had a second chance in life. And I'm never letting that go. I'm never forgetting what I got with that. In fact, I started going back to church, got baptized, got a Bible, started volunteering in the church. Now I'm working as assistant coach for the basketball team at the church, and now I'm dedicating my life to God and what I can do to preach and take care of people for Him and help people. That's what I want to do. I want to help people. I can't say enough good things. So again, my name is Brent. I hope you've been able to get something out of this. Again, I'll delve more, into a little more of the anxiety and depression with this to, again, be more helpful and uplifting. But again, I wanted to share my experience and my personal story that's very personal to me, but that changed my life. And if I could share my personal story and give someone hope a million or a thousand ways, I would. Because I want people to know what happened to me and just how great I've been and what's been done to me. I'm running out of time here, so thank you all very much for listening. I hope you tune in. Hopefully, again, next week I'll have another episode for you to listen to. But again, I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope that you can take something from this, and please share it. I'll pray for you all, and again, I hope you have a blessed day. Have a good day. Bye. Hey, everybody. quick, just to let you know, I'm sorry for the low audio for this episode. I'll make sure and get that fixed. But again, I'm really sorry for the way. So just turn your volume up a little bit for this one, and I'll get it fixed for the next time. Thanks.